My guest today is Maria Victoria Albina, and she asks one very important question. Who is your favorite self? Who is your favorite self? Not your highest self or your best self, but the version of you that you like best. Is it the person that is stressed, anxious, overwhelmed, maybe mean or even cruel sometimes? Or is it the person who is cool, calm, collected, present, able to laugh at a joke and enjoy themselves? That's a bit of a rhetorical question, right? But more importantly, how do we achieve that state? And this is especially important for leaders, those of us who are in the business of caretaking for others or being a manager of people. Oftentimes, especially in the social impact space, community services, we are surrounded by really challenging situations. How do we create energetic boundaries to be able to experience that and still be okay? But Maria Victoria does something I think that's really brilliant and goes one step before that. And we talk about this idea of accepting really who we are. Now, we talk about the stress cycle and we talk about identifying those stressors in our lives. We talk about safe spaces and this idea of what she calls emotional outsourcing, which is akin to codependency, perfectionism, people-pleasing. And let me tell you, it got a little emotional for me there digging into these topics. We also had a lot of fun. Maria is someone who I'm now endeared to and really appreciate the work that she's done. Maria Victoria Albina is a master certified somatic life coach. She is a UC San Francisco trained family nurse practitioner and breathwork meditation guide with a passion for helping humans socialized as women realize that they are their own best healers by reconnecting with their bodies and their minds so they can break free from codependency, perfectionism, and people-pleasing in order to reclaim their joy. Please welcome Maria Victoria Albina. Welcome to Passion and Profits Without Burnout. I'm your host, Jacob Moore. I'm a speaker, coach, childhood suicide loss survivor, and filmmaker who left Hollywood to follow my heart of service. I've helped tens of thousands of people find the balance in their life between passion and profits. On the show, I'm going to teach you how to build a trauma-responsive, resilient, and impactful community and organization, all without burning out. Let's get started. Maria Victoria, welcome. Thank you for joining me on the show. I really appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So when you say your body needs the opportunity to complete its stress cycle, mm-hmm. what does that mean for the uninitiated, for people who are just like living in it and continuously in it? What is actually completing a stress cycle mean? And what does it feel like when that happens?
Yeah. So I think the best example on earth are little kids. So let's say they're on the playground and they fall and they hurt themselves and it really hurts. And they start sobbing and screaming. If they have a safe grown up to go to, they go running to them and they put their little hurt finger in your face and they tell you it hurts and they crawl in your lap if you're safe, right? Yeah. If they have that bond with you, and they cry and they cry and they cry, and then right? They release what we know is called the physiologic sigh. It's a nervous system resetting, and they stand up and they run off. And they're fine.
Right.
They're fine. What happened was there was a fright. And so in that moment of fright, their nervous system went into what's called attachment cry, which is when the nervous system is saying, I'm not sure that I'm not about to die, and I need someone bigger and safer than me to tell me that I'm going to live.
Because
that's the nervous system's job, particularly when we're little, right? Ages 0 to 7 is like, am I about to die right now?
But that doesn't go away when we get older, right?
Oh, No, no, we're still on the lookout for lions, tigers, and bears. It had to be done, and I hope you'll forgive me. But lions, tigers, and bears are around every corner when you're a nervous system. Thank you. I will be a nerd. Anytime. It was at Dorkathy, I think it was, and I appreciated it. Nice. So here we are. Yeah, your nervous system gets its initial settings ages 0 to 7, right? So we start to learn, if I fall and I go to a grown-up, will they say, suck it up, buttercup? Will they say, oh no, my poor baby, and like overreact, which then takes away your locus of control? Or will they meet you and say like, oh, mittens, you really banged it up. Come here. You want to cry in my lap? And like provide that safe, attuned landing place for the nervous system. And so that's how the nervous system learns to calibrate itself. So people who grow up in a lot of hypochondria have big reactions or completely shut down reactions.
Right.
Right.
Just no effect with it.
Right, right, because we learn what's safe in those little moments. So the nervous system gets revved up and it needs to release. It needs to release. It needs to let it out. It needs to not hold that adrenaline inside, because adrenaline is poison. Cortisol is poison, these stress hormones that come out when there's the ouch, when there's the scared, when there's the terror. They can't stay inside our body, but the problem is they do these days. Because in the savannah of evolution,
constantly.
Constantly, because we used to only have a huge adrenaline rush when an actual legit literal tiger was like coming out of the bush towards our face. But now it's like your mom called, you get that text from your boss, your ex comments, like sent you a DM, whatever it is. Adrenaline. Right? There's a budget cut at work. Adrenaline. And so our work, what behooves us as people in this modern moment, is to work with our nervous systems to understand what is coded as lion for you, for Jacob, for Maria Victoria, for you, the listener. What's your lion? What are the 76 things that feel like lion?
Yeah.
And how does your particular body want and need support? Like, what is the proverbial lap you can cry in?
That's step one, right? Is to really identify what means that for you. What is that lion, tiger, bear for you right now today as an adult?
Right.
So then how would that look? How do we identify that without triggering, without getting into like this really challenging time, because I think it's daunting and it's scary for a lot of people to go through that process of, you know, really like listing out all of the things that are challenging for us, right?
Totally. And to be clear, I'm not saying that we need to like put pen to paper and write out like all of the things that upset us, but getting a bit of a handle on it gives us this way to look inside to start to ask what our own unmet needs are. So let me back us up. You said, how do we do this without freaking our nervous system out? We start in ventral vagal. So ventral vagal is the safe and social part of the nervous system. It's when your body's energetically regulated, which is a term we're all seeing bantied about on Instagram without any context, but regulated like a well-oiled machine. There's just enough gas and there's just enough brake, right? So you're driving smoothly, but you've got a brake to keep you from going over the cliff. Right? And that's ventral vagal. It's where I am right now. I feel chill, but like I'm jazzed. I'm talking about nerdy stuff with a nerd, right? My nervous system's in a good place. And ventral vagal is where we feel safe, where our cognition works optimally, right? We can think goodly. It's where our heart and lungs and our digestion and our thyroid, our reproductive function is appropriate. And our emotions are balanced. Our energy is balanced. We have joie de vivre, but we're not hyper, right? We're just... And so we get that ourselves sounds, there. Yeah.
It sounds so idealistic, though. Is that even possible?
Yeah, it's all day. Humans are meant to be in ventral vagal most of the time. With moments of, you know, sympathetic activation, which is fight or flight, and dorsal shutdown, which is the freeze response in the nervous system. These are the three main states of polyvagal theory from Stephen Porges. And it's how our nervous systems run our lives is by moving us through these three states. And it's all a spectrum, right?
Yeah.
So most of the time, most of us are in ventral vagal. We're relatively chill with a little bit of adrenaline, a little bit of activation, and potentially a little bit of shutdown as well, right? Which can sound like, oh my God, there's so many things on my to-do list. I just have like so much to do. I just have to, oh my, I'm sorry. I just got so overwhelmed by my to-do list. I totally forgot what I was talking about. And then we go into door. So we go into that shutdown of like, I'm so maxed on adrenaline. My body thinks it's better for me to just feign death.
Reset.
Yeah. Right. To shut me down. And so, you know, what I love about your show is that you're so solutions focused and remedy focused. So what really behooves us is to find our own way back into ventral vagal and to keep bringing ourselves back and bringing ourselves back. When we say a nervous system is dysregulated, what we mean is not the like shift into adrenaline, because you need adrenaline to put pants on, right? Like sympathetic's not a bad thing. It's getting stuck there. That sucks.
Right.
And that's chronic anxiety, chronic worry. Right. And then on the other end, dorsal is chronic depression, shut down, checked out.
Yep.
And so the regulating can be attention to our breath. That can be a really helpful way to come back into ourselves.
Because the breath is like the barometer of what's going on in the body, right?
Yeah, it's the roadmap. It's how you know what's going on, because the second you're adrenalized, you're full of adrenaline, your heart rate's going to go up and your breath is going to come up into the top of your chest.
Right. Yeah.
Which makes perfect sense, right? You're set to run from a lion. You're not going to be like, I'm taking super Zen deep breaths. Like that would be quite silly and ridiculous, right? Because then you're going to be luncheon meat.
Yeah. You don't got time for that.
So, you no one's got time for that when there's a lion on your tail. Come on now. Come on now.
So
we're smarter than that, right?
So you just shared a lot of really great background information, but I want to circle back to this idea of safe space. We talked about, you know, what that looks like when you're a kid and you have a healthy attachment and you have that, you know, that opportunity. But as an adult, and especially for the listeners of my show who are leaders in the service impact, social services space, they constantly have, whether it's their team or the clients and community that they serve, these really challenging, high stakes, life or death situations that they're surrounded by all the time. And it's really hard, even for the most skilled, to not take that on, to not absorb some of that. So, so safe space from that context, what can that look like?
So, so many things are coming to me at once. One is working on energetic boundaries, two, nervous system regulation, and three, let's contemplate and discuss whether the taking on has to be a problem.
Okay.
So I wonder if the low-hanging fruit here might not be to start with acceptance of the fact that not a one of us who got into the caring professions did so because we don't care about other humans.
Of course.
Right? Yeah. We're empathic, loving, kind. I mean, your girl's a nurse at the end of the day, right? Yeah. Like, it's not what I do on the day-to-day, but I was a hospice nurse. I get it.
It's your heart.
It's my heart. Right? It's your heart. It's us. Yeah. Right. And so while we're working on creating and upholding energetic boundaries that serve us more, because I don't want to say better, I don't want to bring a judgy word in, but boundaries that serve us and therefore our communities, right? And the stakeholders better. What if we started with saying, yeah, you know what? This is my 14th 12-hour shift today, and I'm exhausted, and I just heard this nightmare, terrible trauma, stress, horror story from this client I love. And you know what? Yeah, I'm Velcro, and that just Velcroed onto me. And it's like I have a million lamprey eels coming out of every one of my neurons. So you know what? Instead of fighting that fact and shooting on myself that I should have better energetic boundaries, I should have a more regulated nervous system, why don't we start with just going like, yep,
what is?
I'm Velcro. It's on me. Mm-hmm. And then working with what is to let's see if we can't, instead of pushing, sort of metabolize and alchemize.
Right on.
And work with it to transform it, right? So, It just seems like a more humane way to approach ourselves and thereby our clients and the world.
I really love that. And that whole idea of the mindfulness, right? To be present and to accept what is. I had a really fantastic interview with Megan Rodin, who is a grief specialist. She's like one of the foremost experts in grief. And she really likes to distinguish between empathy and compassion. And, and those of us in this space, it's a hard fine line to walk. But I think to your point, you know, because of course we want to be in a space of compassion, but not have to always. I'm not saying it's bad to feel the feelings, but if it is doing damage, then not to always live in that space. But I love that you're saying, let's do some pre-work there and accept the fact if we are in a place of empathetic overload, to do the work to say, hey, that's okay right now, and have the intention to work to something that works better for us.
Right, because if not, to go Buddhist light on it, we're slinging the second arrow into our own tender hearts, right? Yeah. And we're saying my partner and I joke about the third arrow, which is not, the Buddha didn't talk about that, but that's the being mean to yourself, or like treating yourself poorly for being upset.
Shame.
Like being upset with yourself for being upset. It's creating like a secondary shame on top of the primary shame. It becomes like a lousy, you know, like those cheap ice cream cones that are like not at all ice cream, those swirly flavors. You know what I'm talking about? It's like that, but of shame. And it's just like, you're going to get it's a nightmare, and it's probably bad for your blood sugar. Let's be real.
Well, and the top serve kind of looks like poop. Let's be honest.
Let's be really real. Yeah. It does look very poop-like, and it just tends to fall off the cones. It's like so many layers of disappointment. It's like, why even bother? Instead, just being like, okay, turns out I'm a human and I'm a nurse, I'm a social worker, I'm a community leader, meow, 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 because I care. Right. Yeah. And I don't, I can just decide that's not a problem. That's my superpower. And like, I have ADHD, which means I'm an amazing focuser. Give me a task I'm excited about. Dude, you have no idea. I'm a beast. So I can tell that story and live into that story and see my brain as a superhero powerhouse. Mm-hmm. Or I can see myself as something to control, as a problem, as something to change.
Yeah.
You see where I'm going?
Well,
becomes about that choice, right?
It does. And that really resonates with me on a deep level as, you know, early childhood suicide loss survivor, and having, really grown up in an environment of trauma, it often for many of us turns inwards, right? I must somehow be flawed or bad, and therefore there is something to fix. There is something to do. And that's not to say that we shouldn't do the work. However, accepting ourselves as being okay how we are, as not being broken, is an important first step. I love that you are starting with acceptance here. And once we're sort of have established that, you mentioned energetic boundaries and one other thing. Can we talk about like then what comes next once we're working towards this safe space?
Yeah. Well, I mean, part of it is really about, I think it needs to start with building trust with ourselves, which for those of us with a history of depression, anxiety, et cetera, I get why that's challenging. Like you were just saying, like ask 26-year-old me if I should trust me. And she'd be like, only if you're stupid, right? Yeah. Like, because whatever, we didn't have that kind of relationship with each other.
Right.
And by each other, I mean me and myself. Same. Right. Yeah. And so, right. So one of the things that I find super helpful, and this is the part where I'm like, listen, this is going to sound almost insultingly simple, but remember, we were talking not that long ago about how your nervous system is that of an age 0 to 7 child. Mm-hmm. We're working with the most simplistic understanding of the world. And so the work is often wicked simple. Yeah. That doesn't mean it's easy.
Yeah.
But it's often simple. So just, I hear myself is, I guess, what I'm saying. So building that self-trust for me and my clients is a practice we do every day in my program, is about making a tiny promise to yourself and coming through. We call this the minimum baseline. Mm-hmm. And it's, I make it something that's generally something you're already doing. Please don't add something to your plate. Oh my, for the love of all things that are good and holy, do not add a task.
Yep.
Because the task is not the goal, right? Like going for a walk every morning, that's not what we're talking about. So pick something you already do. Like, let's say when you wake up, you drink a glass of water. Mm-hmm. It's a good practice. Relabel that water drinking in your mind as you fulfilling today's promise to you.
Mm.
And it's neuroscience. Do it and then do it and then do it and then do it. And eventually you start to believe, because neuroplasticity, right? You start to believe that you are someone who can trust themselves to do what you said you would do.
What a great way to set yourself up for success by starting with something that you're already doing. We're not talking about adding, but rather reframing. God, no.
Reframing
what you're already doing.
Brushing your teeth.
Yeah.
And that, peeing when you have to.
That does build trust because you are saying like, hey, no, wait, I am actually already doing something for me. I'm actually doing this good thing for me, and look at the benefits of it. Yay, me, go Team Jake, right? That's great.
Right.
So, and your program is 6 months long. So when you're talking about this process and sort of, you know, stepping through it, you know, one step at a time, I think that that's really important to, as just a reference to say that, like, this is not quick work necessarily, and that's okay.
Yeah. And I think that's where people struggle a bit at first. They want like the magic pill and the magic, right? The silver bullet.
It's garbage. It's garbage. The marketing companies lied to us. That's not how life is. It's not how it works.
Yeah. It's not how it works. You know, and if you think again that like that basic setting in your nervous system took 7 years to take shape, and now you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s trying to change it.
Yeah.
You know, you got to give it a hot minute. What somatic or body-based practices, which is the core of what I do, it's based in slowness and returning to the body, the primacy of the body, right? And not just letting our brains run the show, because we need to remember that our socialization, our conditioning, our survival skills from childhood live in our mind, right? And the body, on the other hand, holds our deepest wisdom and intuition. And when we can come back to the body by slowing it down, and I hear you, busy people. I was a primary care provider at an FQHC. Like, I get what being like, oh my God, people are dying, busy means. And we make mistakes when we rush. We are inefficient when we rush.
Yeah.
And we hurt ourselves when we rush. We don't have good boundaries. We take on more than we can, more than we want to, right? We get resentful, right? Which is an act of emotional violence against our constituents, right? To resent them for having needs because we
absolutely
haven't empowered ourselves to say, no, that is unkind. And we're not trying to be unkind. We're loving people who do the work we do.
And
right? We need to pause and slow things down so we can remember that we do the most good towards the best and the best good for all when we approach life with a slowness, with presence, with mindfulness.
Well, and that,
so
that,
my favorite, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, and that, you know, provides that space for that stress cycle to complete, right?
That's literally where I was going, you genius. Exactly. I love it. I was gonna bring it back to the physiology because nerds are gonna nerd. When we slow down, that allows the adrenaline to biochemically be released from our bodies.
Yeah.
And we know that adrenaline in the body, I mean, ask anyone who's done a bunch of cocaine, right? It's not good for our nervous systems. It's not good for our cells. It ages us. It destroys our mitochondria. It ages us. It's not a good look. right? Biochemically speaking, our neurophysiology does not like to be revved up or shut down, that acetylcholine state of shutdown, of freeze. Mm-hmm. Our bodies love ventral vagal. It's great. The water's warm.
It's the flow.
Right? Yeah. Ventral vagal. Right. It feels super dope, to put it scientifically. So where was I going here, Jacob? Where I'm going is slowing it down. And I was going to give two examples, if you don't mind. One,
yeah, please,
is one of the best. I have this super clear memory. I went to Haiti right after the earthquake, now over a decade ago. 2009. And man, I just remember this one night standing in the ER. We were all sleeping in tents on the tarmac at the Port-au-Prince airport. And it was such a place that could have been utter pandemonium. And it was quiet. Mm. It was cool. It was collected. That ER, like, people were coming in with femurs sticking out of places femurs should not even approximate.
Wow.
And the conversation went like this. Hi, looks like you're hurt. We're going to put you in room 2. Hey, could somebody take him to room 2? Thank you.
Beautiful.
Like, that was the tone and tenor, because that's what the attending set, right? It wasn't like ER on TV, right? It was calm, cool. And you know what? People survived that I feel quite certain would not have had we been in that rushed, harried state. And capitalism, late stage capitalism, has taught us, like you said, to go fast, go do it, productivity.
Yeah.
But how much more efficient, loving, kind, and humane might we be if we just slow down?
I got chills from that. Because I mean, it's such a visceral example, and I can't imagine that and amazing work. Also, what if we were able to capture and transfer that skill to everyday situations, interactions with the partners and children and coworkers?
Yeah, yeah,
right.
I'm doing my best over here to do exactly that. And I got to tell you, I mean, I'm a New Yorker from Buenos Aires. Speed is in my brain. Right? I'm a, like, hey, let's walk faster. Let's exactly. Right. Like, I'm a let's go fast. Like, that's where I come from.
Yeah.
And so I get that urge, and I see the danger in that urge.
Yeah.
It doesn't actually lead to better outcomes. Right. So, I mean, if we just, yeah, it just does not lead to better outcomes in any area of life.
Hustle culture is harmful.
Yes. To everyone, including the earth, right? Like, yeah, it just harms all of us, and it harms our connection with ourselves and each other. You know, the focus of my work is on emotional outsourcing, which is the term, the umbrella term I use for codependent, perfectionist, and people-pleasing habits, which I then defy as chronically and habitually sourcing our sense of safety, worth, and wellness from everyone and everything outside of us instead of from within.
Mm, that made me emotional, right? When you just said that. That, like, that hit something deep in me.
Oh, tell me more, sweetness. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because you know, we were briefly talking pre-show about family dynamics and you know, the challenges that we're kind of going through right now. And it's like this idea of constantly needing other people to be our source, right? How that is the opposite of safe space, because people are fallible, people are unreliable. Sometimes. And if we are always depending on that from others and we can't do for ourselves, then how are we ever going to feel safe?
Right. And so it becomes about it recognizing that the remedy to codependence isn't independence, it's interdependence.
Yeah.
So it's living with a deep sense of one's own autonomy and the autonomy of others, which in codependency, we do not recognize other people's autonomy, right? We unwittingly seek to manipulate them, control them, sort of manage them, right? Be strategic around what they think and feel about us and what they think and feel. Oh, don't be sad. It's okay. I'll fix it.
Yeah.
Instead of, like, let the kid be sad.
Feel your feels. It's okay.
right? It's okay. It's great. I will hold you, but feel it. And so in interdependence, we learn how to show up for ourselves so that we can show up for each other and expect that in a mutualistic, reciprocal way from others that doesn't obviate our capacity to do it for ourselves. It doesn't come from lack. It comes from abundance. So I absolutely know I can depend on my partner to be there for me, right? And she can depend on me as well. We've got each other.
Yeah.
But I don't cling to her because I can't do it for me. No, I got me. I'm good. Mm-hmm. And it's so dope that if I'm having a rough day, she'll swoop in and take care of it.
Yeah, it's got your back.
And I'll do the same for her, right? It's the next level.
it really is. And I love that.
Yeah.
And earlier, I didn't mean to say that people are inherently unreliable. It's just that people are often-
I get your point,
dealing
though.
With their own stuff. And so they don't always have the wherewithal, the capacity,
right.
if that's our sole source. At Five Bridges, we look at relationships very simply with letters, and the letter A is that codependent relationship where if one person moves, then the other person falls. And instead we like to look at the letter H where two people are independent, standing on their own, but connected. And if they move apart, then that's okay. Because each are still able to stand on their own. And it's very simple imagery. And yet how often do we forget how to maintain those boundaries? You know,
it's so beautiful. And I love that visual. It's really great.
Yeah. I think a lot of times that hustle culture tells us that we need to figure it out on our own because, there is a sense of shame around it. Like if we can't figure it out, if we can't do this for ourselves, if we can't get over this, then somehow we're broken or we failed, right? So I often find that leaders especially have a hard time asking for help. I suspect that why you do what you do is because having a guide through that process, having an objective third party who is on your side, but not in it with you, is invaluable.
It is. And add the Rogerian principle that the guiding nervous system sets the tone for all the nervous systems, right? All the work that I've done to regulate myself comes into the room.
Well, my biggest takeaway from this episode, or rather my biggest next step from this episode is to really solidify a picture of my favorite self. I would encourage you to do the same thing as Maria Victoria suggested, when you're in the shower or taking a drive, working out, or just take a quiet moment to yourself and conjure that picture of your favorite self. What do they look like? What do they sound like? What does it feel like to be in their skin? And once you have brought that image or that memory to mind, remember that that's you. It's always been you. It is in you, they are in you and ready at any time to come forth. It's a matter of reconnecting, being present, like Maria Victoria said. Having that image and having something to work towards is, I think, really important. Sometimes the journey can be challenging, can be discursive, and that's where having a guide can be very helpful. So whether that's me and my team at Five Bridges or Maria Victoria or a therapist or a mentor, I would encourage you to reach out for that type of support. We all need it. Leaders especially need that impartial third party who is on our side, who can offer perspective and help us find that favorite version of ourselves. I'm curious to know what your biggest takeaway from this episode is. And I'm curious to know what your favorite version of yourself looks like. I'm going to do some more work on this, and I'm going to share it with you all on social media, wherever you are. If you could comment and let us know what that looks like to you. I'm curious. I'm really curious to know. Well, that's it for today. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your time. And until next time, be well.
Thanks so much for listening to Passion and Profits Without Burnout. I hope that you found some impactful takeaways. And if you did, I'd love to hear from you. Share a screenshot on your IG story, tag me, or send me a quick message. This show is for you, so any feedback is welcomed. Hey, and make sure you're also subscribed to the show so you don't miss any of our new episodes. And if you could, take a few minutes to leave me a 5-star review. That'd be greatly appreciated. Thanks for listening, and be well.